My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Benton Standings with us on this show as our Washington Insider every Monday and Friday right around now, 12 noon Eastern. Follow Ben on Twitter at Ben Standing. Listen to his podcast, Standing Room Only, anywhere you get a podcast, and subscribe to The Athletic, where Ben writes and writes a lot and does it very well. Do we have more questions after this offseason? Fewer questions or the same amount when it comes to the offensive line?
Oh, good question. I guess it depends how one views, say, Andrew Wiley, for people who were thinking he needed to be replaced, which I never really thought was going to happen. So I would say fewer questions in the sense that, okay, they signed Tyler Biadasz. They signed Nick Allegretti. We still have to see a guy who was the backup in Kansas City, how he emerges as a starter. But obviously he played in the playoffs and played at a pretty good level. So I think the left tackle spot remains the one question and a big one. But, you know, they did draft Brandon Coleman, and to whatever degree they think he's able to play this year may go a long way towards addressing that question. But that's, I guess broadly I'd say less, but the one that's still out there is, you know, I think reasonably still a significant question.
Don't you have less, though, just to start with, given the change in quarterback and the change in offensive coordinator, or not?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, yes. I mean, so much last year was just, you know, as we look back on it now, it almost is like, wow, that wasn't a fever dream, right? They really had a coordinator come in who seemed to want to run an offense as if the quarterback he had was some experienced vet as opposed to a guy with one career start. And then the quarterback himself, while he showed some good promise, clearly was holding onto the ball too long, leading to a lot of these sacks, et cetera. So, yeah, I think from those perspectives, sure. Now, granted, Jaden Daniels had a very high pressure to sack ratio in college, and that's going to be something we're going to have to see how that evolves over time. But yeah, I mean, I think in general, there's just if nothing else, there's more optimism with the Kingsbury Daniels combination than there was last year with the Bienemy Howell one, for sure.
Let me just mention, because I spent multiple, you know, shows talking about the pressure to sack percentage number on Jaden Daniels leading up to the draft. Let me just tell you something that I know for sure. The analytics people in the organization, it didn't bother them at all. There's a lot of context around those numbers, not to mention that it improved significantly in his final season. But I know for a fact the analytics people with this organization were not concerned about pressure pressure to sack percentage. They saw a lot of what we taught and what we've talked about on this show going back before the draft, that there was a ton of context around a lot of that. Hey, last week, Dan Quinn mentioned, you know, kind of the flexibility and the versatility of some of the defensive players. And then he just threw in that, you know, we got some wide receivers that are lining up in the backfield. And I, with you on Friday, I think we tried to discuss this. Maybe I'm thinking about somebody else. But several people tweeted me and said, Luke McCaffrey's the one that's been lining up in the backfield as a running back. I find that interesting. He's their tallest receiver. I know what his brother is as a running back, but do you know much about Luke McCaffrey being a guy that they could use out of the backfield?
I mean, they were giving him some handoffs sort of in like on the side and position drills. I don't know how much I was seeing him like getting that kind of work in like sevens or 11s, but you know, again, obviously all that is just trying to get a feel for anything. Look, to quote Kevin Garnett, you know, anything is possible. I think right now when it comes to this offense.
You didn't say it with so much enthusiasm like you just did.
No, I agree. I got to dial it down. Look, McCaffrey is he was a former quarterback, so he's going to have some of those scrambling chops by nature, and you know, the opportunity to put the ball in the hands of your playmakers in any way, shape, or form makes some sense. So, sure, I mean, again, this is the whole theme, really, of this offseason program, is to study each player and get a feel for what they can offer so that when they go make game plans moving forward, they can determine, hey, if we want to have a play where, you know, it's not like we don't see plays where wide receivers get the ball out of the backfield, who can do that for us? Last year, Curtis Samuel was getting a lot of those. Terry McLaurin's never been that guy, right? Jahan Dotson hasn't been that guy. So maybe, hey, can this guy who was a former quarterback do some of that for us? So, you know, they're taking a look at it all. And, you know, beyond that, you know, we'll see. I mean, Deami Brown hasn't done that here. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying like, oh, this is obvious that they were going to do this. But sure, I kind of understand if they want to, again, just sort of test the limits of everybody, that McCaffrey could make some sense in that regard.
Anything is possible. This is true. So let's talk some Jaden Daniels here for a moment. Are there target dates? Are there things that you're thinking about in terms of, you know, when Dan Quinn says he's our starter, when he starts taking every first team rep when we get to training camp, does he start the first preseason game as the starter? Just give me some key kind of target dates and your guesses on some of those big things before what I think we all believe, or most of us believe, will be a week one start at Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I actually asked Tavita Pritchard this, I guess like 2 weeks ago, we had access to the assistants. I'm like, is there a point where you're like, okay, on this date, I'm very curious to see, knowing what we're going to be doing, what we're going to, you know, installing or working on in practice. On this date, I am very fascinated to see where Jaden Daniels is. And he said, well, that's a really interesting question. And then remembered he's not the offensive coordinator and said, that's probably a better question for Cliff Kingsbury. So he didn't give me a great answer. Here's my guess. My guess is Jaden Daniels is going to get all the QB1 duties from here on out, unless he has a major setback or something like that. He handled the QB1 duties essentially this last 3 days in minicamp, and I don't really see any reason to think it's going backwards. Like, there's, you know, again, I don't want to assume too much, but I don't really think there's any competition here. Even if Dan Quinn's going to say that, no matter, every time we ask about anybody starting, that's the term they're coming up with, and you know, it's good coach speak. But I just think Daniels is going to be, you know, the guy going forward. He's got to get the work in. You know, I mean, like last year, you know, Ron Rivera had already sort of pot committed to Sam Howell 10 seconds after the previous season ended. So even though Jacoby Brissett, clearly the more experienced guy, you know, there was never even much of a debate there as what was going to happen. Here, you know, Mariota, you know, he's obviously more experienced as well, but I don't think anybody's looking at Marcus Mariota as a potential starter, or at least Brissett was sort of, you know, on that line of if you want to start him, you can. So I don't really, you know, unless it's just sort of quasi for show, or, you know, just to make sure Mariota is prepared as possible should he ever have to play, I just imagine it's Daniels at QB1 in all facets going forward.
You know what's interesting is Jacoby Brissett in New England, and I read in The Athletic, there was kind of a summary. You had one for Washington, and the New England summary is Jacoby Brissett is the starting quarterback. He took every single first-team rep with Drake May there. Like, they're not pushing it with Drake May. There's Jacoby Brissett with another North Carolina quarterback, one that was drafted 3 overall and has one less start than Sam Howell did at the NFL level a year ago. And New England's not messing around. Jacoby Brissett's going to be the starting quarterback in New England. How about the other rookies? We didn't hear a lot during these OTAs or mandatory minicamp, you know, not since rookie minicamp, but how have the other rookies, shown so far? Obviously, Johnny Newton, not a part of that, and I will ask you for an update, but who stood out? You know, San Rostil, Sinnott, Coleman, McCaffrey, McGee, you know, the Hampton, John Baptiste, you know, maybe even an undrafted free agent. Who were people out there kind of taking notice of?
Yeah, I think Ben Sinnott, he caught my eye a couple times of working in the red zone, catching, some passes in that range. You know, his versatility is a huge part of his portfolio, the ability to play, not just be a pass catcher, but be a fullback, be a more traditional tight end. And, you know, I do feel like the two tight end set is going to be, you know, I'm not saying necessarily the predominant look, but, you know, when you consider some of the questions on the offensive line, probably a desire to run the ball a fair amount, even if it's just a setup, the play action, having two tight ends can make sense. And, you know, you have Ertz, you have John Bates, but, I think Sinnott, you know, they drafted him for a reason, and I think he's going to be out there, I would think, a decent amount. Jordan McGee, you know, I've said this before, one of the challenges with this offseason program for me compared to others has been there's no baseline out there. I can't assume anything because everything is different. New coaching staff, half the roster is gone.
Right.
When I'm looking anywhere, I'm like, okay, like last year, do I really have to watch the defensive line a ton? Not really, right? I mean, we kind of know what's going on there. Here, you have to kind of watch everything. So it's kind of hard to see exactly how everybody's doing at all times. But I did notice Jordan McGee a couple of times, you know, in terms of just his, when he was moving towards the pocket, being a pretty aggressive player there. And I've heard a lot of good things in general from out, you know, including from people like this, you know, from the pre-draft aspect of it, really like him. So I think Jordan McGee, like, this is a bit of a wild speculation, but knowing he's going to be like the backup for Bobby Wagner, I kind of view him as like sort of the third linebacker right now with Jamin Davis in this sort of, you know,
pass rusher.
I don't know what he is.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually a pretty key deal, because if Jamin Davis isn't the third linebacker, I don't really know what his role is exactly and what that even means for him longer, you know, into this season. So McGee, I think, has stood out. I think Sanders still has been, he's shown some good things that, you know, again, with the passing, obviously the defense in general has the edge over offense this early, but in the passing game, you know, when it's just purely a one-on-one, the receivers have an edge. But, you know, I think with Sanders still, you can, you know, see some of the fight, some of the determination with him. That is part of why they drafted a guy like that beyond making plays. So I think those are some of the guys that stood out. I will say there was one play where somebody threw a pass to Armani Rogers over the middle and he caught it and he got thumped. Like, it wasn't like, you know, it's not a play that they're going to have to, the league office is going to cry over excessive hitting, but just like, you know, some contact. And I was like, ooh, who made that one? And it was Dominic Hampton, who to me feels like a poster child for the type of defensive back that this coaching staff is from Dallas, you know, found success with. A guy's got some good size. He and Jeremy Chinn are basically the physical dimensions are the exact same, 6'3", 220. And, you know, I think that's a guy that they are pretty interested in seeing how it plays out because of their success turning sort of random defensive backs into legit rotation players.
Yeah, I mean, Derek Forrest essentially was picked in the exact same round, right? Somewhere around there. Last regime. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about fifth rounders when you're talking about McGee and Hampton. And we see those end up becoming players in the NFL all the time. We're talking to Ben Standig, of course. So you watched that Commander Log episode 3, the draft, the 3-day draft episode, correct?
Yes.
What did you think of it? I talked about it earlier in the show. I thought it was well done. I thought there were, you know, some ways that I mentioned, but I want to hear what yours were.
Yeah, I love those behind the scenes videos. You know, the production was fine. You know, you see things like this and you realize why Hard Knocks doesn't seem to resonate as much anymore because we get these things from the teams pretty regularly. So, but yeah, I thought it was well done. And, you know, you get some interesting notes here and there about, you know, what they're thinking in the moment. Of course, they're also editing out what they're thinking. We saw nothing about the potential trades into the first round, right, for an offensive tackle. So, you know, who
knows
what
else. That's true. Good observation. But we had heard that there was interest. Well, I mean, Peters basically implied that, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm saying we saw nothing about how that went
nothing
down.
Nothing on that. Right.
Right. So, you know, it's all, you got to remember the editing.
Oh, that would have been actually the most interesting thing. I totally forgot about that. If they had included the attempt to get back into the first round on night one. I wonder why they excluded that.
Well, you know, I guess probably
you know
they don't want to, you know.
Do you know why? Because a player was probably involved.
Well, that, or, you know, they're saying certain things about why they want to do what they want to do, right? I mean, they, you know, if they're trying to get an offensive tackle, then they're saying, hey, we really got to do this, or who knows? Also, they ultimately landed on Brandon Coleman, so they did get somebody, and I'm sure they're going to say, you know, he was high on their board and all that stuff. But the fun part there could be if one of the other teams out there that they were talking to puts out their own video and shows how they decided, you know, similar to how we saw Adam Peters interact with Howie Roseman for the trade that did happen. Maybe some of those teams say, we had this opportunity. Do we want to do it or whatever? But I think the thing that was the most interesting to me was sort of seeing everybody in their, I mean, I know they know the camera's on them, but there's too much happening in real time to be acting for the camera. So I think that we got to see a lot of these people kind of be who they are, fill in the role that we perceive them to be. I mean, Adam Peters clearly in charge without question. Right. And he's pretty calm. It seems like in these moments, he's kind of almost like having a good time. Like, you know, he's making jokes. He's freaking everybody out when he says they clearly want to take Sandrastil. He finds out that the team before them is picking a Michigan player. And he tells everybody, yeah, they're taking Michigan defensive tackle. Yeah. He found it so amusing. He did it once to Newmark and Josh Harris. Then he does it again a few minutes later to Dan Quinn. And Dan Quinn like seems like he's going to have a heart attack while it's happening. So I thought that was interesting. You know, the owner aspect, of course, is key here. Josh Harris is in the room. I know there are people who don't even want the owner in the room. That's insane. He owns the team. He's going to be in the room. But Josh Harris was very – he was interested in what is happening. At one point, like Peters is, you know, talking to another team about something. I think it was maybe a trade in one direction or another. And Harris is asking, so what's the deal now? You're waiting for them to call you back, or do you call them, or how does that work? And then the most notable one was when they're getting ready to draft Ben Sinnott, and Harris says sort of adorably, hey, is there going to be enough, you know, snaps for him to play because we've got Zach Ertz? And it's kind of like, wow. Right. Obviously, Zach Ertz is at best a one-year deal here, and Benson is a longer-term play. But it was, you know, to see the interaction.
Did you refer to that as adorable? Why? Because he didn't understand that, you know, that a lot of teams put two tight ends out on the field at the same time.
Well, yeah. Look, at the end of the day, you know, prior to a year ago, Josh Harris was a fan of the team. He wasn't owning the team. So he's watching this as many people do. Why, you know, should they do this? What is, how is that going to work? The same people who, you know, again, obviously I'm not comparing Josh Harris to everybody who's emailing you all the time and saying, Kevin, what about this? But, like, to an extent, that's kind of how it was, right? I mean, he's a fan of the team. He's not in the team. Now, all of a sudden, he goes from a fan to being in the literal draft war room. So he's asking, hey, how does this work? And he told us, you know, back when he bought the team or around that time, like, hey, I'm going to be in the room, just like I am with the Sixers and I guess the Devils maybe. But, like, I'm not going to be putting my thumb on the scale, but I want to know what's going on. I want these guys to explain it to me. So I just thought it was fun to see that aspect of him. And, you know,
I mean, he's in the room. Like, he's hovering. And I say that it's just because it's what he's doing. I don't mean that in a way in which he's intrusive at all, because that's not what comes out of this 50-minute video out of hours and hours and hours of the draft. But, yeah, I mean, he wants to know what's going on. And I thought Adam Peters does a really good job of being focused, because you got to be focused that night. Things are happening quickly. I mean, when they picked Sanders still and they got him, they're on the clock, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes later with number 53. And, you know, I bet you there's some that would say, Jesus, can we take the owner over here and let him try some of these, you know, these really good brownies that Mrs. Peters made. But he handled it well. I mean, I thought Adam Peters just came off as a guy that's got some chops in that moment, more so than almost anybody else in the room.
Yeah, no, he just looks very smooth and very comfortable. And, you know, I know we focus so much on...
Soft-spoken, by the way. Soft-spoken.
Yeah, I know we focus typically on, we judge these GMs by, like, you know, the moves that they actually make. But there is something to be said for being, you know, we talk about being leader of men, but, like, being the tone setter of the situation. You know, he is, putting the owner aside, Adam Peters is the one, the top of the overall Washington Commanders football, tree right now, whatever. He's the one setting the tone, including for the coach. Now, Dan Quinn's in charge of the football side, but it's Adam Peters who's, whether it's showing calm as he did or if it's showing tension, that's going to be felt through everybody else and trickle down. So he does a good job of it, as we see in this video, of being in the moment, not, you know, he's taking it seriously, but he's also still finding times to make some jokes, whatever, and to be, and it also, you know, seemed to be a pretty inclusive deal. It's not just him and Lance Newmark huddling up the whole time. It's, you know, he's talking to this, talking to that. Yes. They bring Kingsbury over at one point,
right?
Which is also to show that Kingsbury's involved, but not too involved with this. So I think Peters definitely, from a tone setting standpoint, did a really good job. Obviously, we'll see over time if the execution worked. But in terms of what was happening in the moment, yeah, he seemed to be. It was a pretty good look for him, I thought.
Yeah, there's a very. With Peters, I mean, this was noticeable in his first interview. There's a very kind of Northern California, Silicon Valley kind of attitude. And, you know, for the lack of a better description, polish, I would say, as well to him. Let me just, your observation was the best one. And clearly there's probably a lot of video on Washington, you know, trying to trade back up into the first round to take, you know, a tackle in the draft. That would have been interesting to see. But I think, you know, your point is a good one. It's not just, you know, it's not just if maybe a player is going to be involved in the trade. You would not want that player to know. But it's that, hey, we're desperate for a left tackle. And, the, you know, what does that say about, you know, Lucas and the rest of them? So I guess, but we could see that somewhere else. We could see that on, who was, I'm trying to think, who were they talking to? Do you remember who they were talking to in the first round? Because the last tackle taken was the Arizona kid that you're, no, the Oklahoma kid that you said before the draft they liked.
Yeah, Tyler Guyton went to Tyler Dallas Guyton. After Dallas traded down a little bit. Yeah, I had heard they went all the way up into the, like, sort of the middle of the first round to try to talk to a team or two, and then, you know,
was
sort
it
of
Mims,
drop back
the guy from who was it that you think they were targeting? That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, I kind of Mims to me was the one that made the most sense, because just listening to teams talk about him, it was like, okay, he hasn't played a ton, but what we've seen is pretty outlandish, and that seemed to be the guy that made the most sense. Where the other linemen after him is where he started getting more questions. You know, can they play tackle ultimately, and you know, things like that. So yeah, I think Mims was the one that made sense to me, and that's why moving in potentially the middle of the first round, because right, he ultimately went to the Bengals, right? I think that's right, at 18. So that, that's one of those where it seemed very plausible that may be what happened. So yeah, I think him, but yes, if they continue to look into trade in the first round, which it sounds like they did, then you're looking at your Guyton's and your Jordan Morgan's as well.
Did you pick up on that right before the McCaffrey pick? You know, when Cameron Kitchens gets picked by the Rams, and he says, Adam Peters says, they didn't make it any easier. They both play the way we want them to play. I'm wondering if that guy Kitchens hadn't been picked at 99 and he were available at 100, if he would have been the pick. I don't know. But I thought that was an interesting thing, too. Like, they had a couple of players there, including McCaffrey, that they seemed to be interested in.
Yeah, and this is why, even though the Hard Knocks thing is heavily edited as well, this is why having an outside company do it, to an extent, I say outside, I mean, you know, it's still the NFL, but like having somebody outside of the team's own editors put this thing together, because right, there was at least once or twice where they mentioned possibly like eyeing like two different players at a pick, but yeah, we never hear who the other one is. And, right, you know, that's the stuff that is as interesting as anything else.
So I agree.
For our purposes, to compare, well, they could have had this, they could have gone down this road, and they didn't, or what have you. So, yeah, so it would be great if we had that, but
Sanders still, they were super excited about, but I don't think there's any doubt, because you see the exchange between Lance Newmark and Adam Peters when the Falcons take the defensive tackle from Clemson at 35, and they know they're going to get Johnny Newton. Because that really was clearly a guy, when they entered night two, they're like, if this guy's there at 36, we're going to feel like we stole one. And I think they feel like they did. Now he's hurt, and we'll see what happens in terms of readiness for training camp. But I thought that just confirmed what we all thought, which was this was clearly the highest guy on their board at that moment, and they were really excited that he was there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, you know, again, some of this can occasionally feel manufactured, but this one, based on what we had already known and what we see, didn't. And there was, right, there was even some talk we saw in film about them even considering trading up, but ultimately, obviously, playing it out and deciding they didn't have to.
Well, I thought the conversation was with Roseman at 36. Obviously, the conversation with Roseman at 40, which was the one that results in Adam Peters saying, you're a pain in the ass. But at 36, I think they might be on the phone with Roseman, too, who's trying to get up. But they want – because that's when he says, no, we're going to stick here and make the pick. If Newton had gone at 35 – to Atlanta, maybe Washington would have dealt 36 to Philadelphia. That's the way I took it. I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, that was in play too. By the way, like, you know, we focused so much on Atlanta's draft because of the Michael Penix pick. You know, I had forgotten that they took a defensive tackle before Johnny Newton, which, you know, again, we'll see over time, but in terms of just the pre-draft rankings, that was, you know, Newton was being viewed as a you know, sort of late first, early second.
Well, maybe Atlanta knew about the foot injury.
Maybe. I mean, look, obviously everybody has their own opinions, and what they're looking to do on defense, maybe this other guy was a better fit. But, yeah, just in terms of positioning, Newton was at, you know, seemingly the whole time rated as, you know, top 2-3 defensive tackle.
All right, I got to go. Real quickly, actually, Newton, in time for training camp or not?
They've said it's unclear, so I have no idea, but obviously they're going to take their time with it one way or the other.
I got to roll. Thanks.
See ya.
All right, Ben Standing, everybody. You're going to hear Eric Flack from WUSA Channel 9 next on this D.C. sports study, which was done to determine the economic viability of bringing a stadium back to D.C. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, theteam980.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jumping on with me right now is Eric Flack from WUSA Channel 9. Eric's a Murrow and Emmy Award-winning chief investigative reporter. He's been doing a lot of sports stories in recent months, really more than recent months, the last year, year and a half. Eric can be followed on X on Twitter, at Eric Flack TV. Eric tweeted out the other day that DC released a sports study, which kind of described what the new stadium in D.C., if the Commanders moved back, would do for the city. And I don't know a lot about this study. And so I want to start there because my sense is a lot of people listening, Eric, don't know a lot about it either. So first of all, what is this study? Secondly, why did they do it?
I think that's a good question, and I think it's a good place to start. I think it's very significant in that it is, in many ways, a symbolic opening of the D.C. effort in earnest to bring the Commanders back to RFK. And because they know, they being Mayor Bowser, Kendra McDuffie, and various other leaders who want a stadium, they know that it is going to be a tough sell for the no stadium people, especially those on DC Council, that they wanted to present a picture, a report of how good this is going to be financially for DC. So last year, they paid two different firms, one of which is a consulting firm of Jack Evans, former D.C. council member, who was, if you follow D.C. politics, has always been very, very pro-stadium,
right,
and helped make Nats Park a reality and helped get the taxpayer money for Nats Park. And they gave them money to say, look at the economy of D.C. sports, not all stadiums everywhere, D.C. sports. Do stadiums, arenas, baseball parks, soccer fields, do they help drive our economy here in D.C.? And, oh, by the way, what would be the best financing model that we could use that other people, other cities have successfully used to finance a stadium here in D.C.? And I think they wanted to be able to present that to the public as they're opening. So every time from here until this is done, when a reporter like me or a host like you says, Mayor, but what about the money? Aren't there other needs in the city? She's going to trot out this study and say all the rosy things that the study said about what sports professional sports arenas and stadiums mean for D.C. economically, and specifically the windfall, the financial windfall that they have predicted a Washington Commanders stadium on the RFK site would bring to D.C.
How much did this study cost?
$400,000, $394,000 collectively. I don't know the breakup. There were two firms. So Jack Evans' firm, for instance, did not get all $400,000, but it was a total of $400,000 to these two firms. And these are firms that have done similar studies for other professional sports organizations nationwide. The Oakland A's and their some of their stadium studies are an example of projects this specific group has worked on.
All right, so the results indicate that there would be a financial windfall bringing the football team back to the city. Quantify that financial windfall.
They are predicting $1.26 billion annually for the entire D.C. economy and $26 million in tax revenues, specifically into D.C. government coffers. These are dollars that they were clear to point out are not going to be there if there is no football stadium. In fact, they had they have it broken down in gross and net, you know, financial impact. The gross would be this is how much D.C. is just going to make in general, but that money would be there if there's no football stadium because you're spending it other places. This is specifically the extra money that they're predicting D.C. economy and the D.C. government would get from the football stadium.
Right, but it's not just the football team playing in the football stadium. It would be based on all of the other events that they would plan on having in that stadium, correct?
The study is predicting, and again, these are not plans. To make it clear, there are not sketches and diagrams and mock-ups of what this looks like. This is a study that says, if we spend X amount on this, if we spend X amount on this, if we spend X amount on this, this is what we can expect in return. So the study is predicting those financial windfall numbers off of a football stadium, an entertainment venue, which is a standalone, hotel, office space, housing, and residential as well. And then I think, obviously, restaurants and bars. Those are the main categories. So they allotted the cost of the project, a project like this, as $3.1 billion. But $2 billion of that is the football stadium. Then another huge pot of money would be the entertainment complex. So the total cost of the project is over $3 billion. They are predicting $2 billion for a football stadium, which is on the less expensive side. But every time a new stadium is announced, these costs go up. But that's what they're using for their model.
So I think hopefully everybody grasps what this study really was. It was essentially, at the end of the day, part of what their pitch will be to not only city council members, but to their constituency on why 100%. We should fund and help fund and pay for a stadium, because it's going to be a financial windfall from the stadium. But you said, and you pointed out even in your comments on X on Twitter this week, that there's nothing specific in there about how much they would pay for the new stadium, how they would fund that. You know, I had you on just a couple of weeks ago after you broke that story, your conversation, your report that you had learned from, you know, the chief financial officer, et cetera, that, you know, would they even be able with their debt, their current debt on the books, to especially after the keeping of the Wizards and Capitals in Chinatown and the commitment there. So, I mean, isn't it somewhat telling, Eric, that as part of this study, there isn't detail on how they would fund this?
Here's what I can tell you, Kevin. I know from multiple sources that there is a section in this study, this report, let's call it, that does address that. There are unreleased pages by DC government, and I know that for a fact. I have been fighting through open records requests. I believe that the only reason their hand was forced to go public with this study now is I filed an open records request 27 days ago to get the study. They are legally required to release it, which they didn't do in the proper amount of time, but they released part of it.
Why are they legally? Because it was paid for with tax money?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Because it's a government document, because it's a piece of paper.
Right.
If there is a piece of paper that exists that is not protected by some privacy, the public, not just me, you are entitled to it through this process. So they have released this part, but they, for whatever reason, and I continue to fight for it, have not released the section which suggests the financing piece of it. How are you going to create a taxing district? What are you going to do when you have so little borrowing power left to create? And I don't know what it is that they don't want to put out there. It's confusing to me because they're going to have to do it eventually anyway. But that is the piece that's left out that I think is like the elephant in the room, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Of course. Now, I'm trying to think why they wouldn't, like, you know, giving them some benefit of the doubt of maybe they're maybe strategically disclosing how they'd go about it might hurt, you know, the negotiation of rates or whatever, right?
I think that's correct. I think if we're searching our mind to give the DC side of this, why they don't want to put this out there or why they're trying not to, you could argue that it could hurt their negotiating power against Maryland, against Virginia, and with the commanders.
Well,
and
even the funding, kind of, even the funding mechanisms, you know, however they go about it, then, I mean, if they disclose exactly what they want to do and how they want to do it up front, I could see where they could make the case that it reduces their leverage in any kind of negotiation with, with the team and with potential funding mechanisms.
For sure, which is a huge miscalculation on their part to pay, you know, public dollars and do it in this way and then not realize that they are obligated to share that with the public. They're going to have to eventually. I mean, they know, I think deep down they know that because people are not going to stop asking this question. But for now, they're trying to focus. And, you know, also, they may not have wanted to muddy the rosy picture of what this is going to mean financially for D.C. or what this could mean financially for D.C. with the other part of the story, which is, well, there's this whole funding issue.
Yeah.
And I guess it is possible strategically that they don't get as much shine from $1.26 billion for the annually for the economy. That's not even counting the one-time construction cost. You know, $26 million in tax revenues for the city. They want people to focus on that for a while before they focus on the much more difficult other piece.
Yeah, don't look over here on how we're going to pay for it. Look
correct.
At what the results will be. All right, two more questions. You had mentioned that the overall project stadium to the rest of it, including an something I think right next to the stadium, another entertainment, you know, option, maybe a small arena, something, you know, equivalent to the Anthem or whatever. But the total price tag somewhere around $3.1 billion. What is your guess today in terms of what they could sell and get done in terms of their contribution to this?
$1 billion. Somewhere in the neighborhood of... I'm looking at what... And some of this is off the top of my head, Kevin. I'm sorry. But I think Jacksonville maybe gave like $900 million to their stadium renovation. $800 million, I think... Tennessee was a huge amount of money that they gave. But I know that there are multiple stadium projects, and I think the bottom line cost of entry to be reasonable, is high hundreds of millions, around a billion. So I put it at $800 million to $1 billion. I mean, if you give $520 million to renovations at Capital One, just by scale, you're building a whole new. I mean, you know, you gotta. Josh Harris is gonna want like a fair shake on this deal if they're gonna happen. Now, there is a program from the NFL which will help.
It's like $250 million, right?
$300 million, okay. And it's a loan, but you pay it back through what you've already paid, already would be paying. You don't pay it back, basically. It's a financing tool. So that would be my guess.
So I guess the follow-up would it be enough for the team to say,
so.
That's a comparable deal to Maryland. We're coming back to D.C. You think it would be?
I think they want to come back to D.C. Just covering this and talking to you and just seeing the way the wind keeps blowing and trying to talk to the team, and they're being very tight-lipped, and Josh Harris being who he is and talking about RFK. If he can get anything reasonable done, and especially since it fits, as we've talked about, his philosophical model of uplifting a community that needs to be uplifted, and he's trying to do the same thing in downtown Philadelphia. It is the exact same thing trying to do in downtown Philly he'd be doing in downtown D.C. I think they want to come back. I think it's just, like, at this point, trying to make sure that they can get a reasonable deal. I don't think they're going to do it at all costs.
There you go. Eric Flack, he joined me on my podcast Friday. He had a lot to say about the type of stadium and what it would take to get a Super Bowl. And if you want to hear him on that, just go to my podcast at thekevinsheehanshow.com. Right now, by the way, you get bonus days to save if you call Window Nation. During Window Nation's semi-annual sale, which has been extended through June 30th, you can get quality, affordable windows at their 50% off price right now with 0% interest for 5 years. But they've added 10% more off your window purchase if you schedule an estimate now. If you've got older windows, if they're rotted, if they're broken, if you're tired of paying high utility bills, Window Nation's maintenance-free windows will fix all of those problems for decades. Some wood windows are made from waste materials like wood fibers. Why would you want that for your home? Window Nation's top quality vinyl won't bow to the hot sun. They're designed with premium insulation, and they come with a lifetime warranty. Put an end to your window worries. Hurry, the sale ends June 30th, so schedule a fast, no obligation in-home estimate with the pros at Window Nation. Don't miss your chance to save. Call them at 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com. A couple more notes from our show, including a very good observation about the final putt from Bryson yesterday. We'll do that when we come back. So real quickly about the last putt that Pavon, the Frenchman, putted, marked his ball, and then Bryson made the actual putt. And then we had to wait for Pavon to putt his. Apparently it was a pretty similar line. So it would have been a major advantage for Bryson to have seen Pavon putt before him to clear the deck for him to win it and have the final putt of the tournament. And that's perhaps the reason that he marked and made Bryson putt first. But we have a bigger conversation here. Brandon Ayuk, the receiver for the 49ers, who does not have a contract extension, but potentially wants one. I mean, this is the big conversation about Ayuk being along with CeeDee Lamb among the group of receivers to get paid next. Ayuk, there's video of Ayuk and Jaden Daniels, his college quarterback at Arizona State, speaking via, I guess, just phone. And you're going to hear the conversation where Ayuk tells Jaden Daniels, they said they don't want me back, I swear.
They said they don't want me back.
That's it.
I swear.
Mama!
So, was that Jaden screaming, like, let's go get him?
Yeah, that was Jaden screaming, my boy, on the other side of the FaceTime.
I mean, interesting. Ayuk saying they don't want him back. I can't imagine that the 49ers don't want Brandon Ayuk back.
Well, you know what's really interesting about this?
What?
Brandon Ayuk is the one who posted this video. This is on his personal TikTok account.
Oh, it's on his TikTok.
Yeah, so he posted this, which is it's either a leverage play or he really doesn't want to be there anymore.
Or, and maybe he'd like to come to Washington. What do they have to remember? Because they'd have to pay him, which, by the way, they have the cap space to do it, you're not talking about the same compensation level that it would be if he had years left on his deal, you know, and you didn't have to pay him. I don't know what it is. It's probably a future second. That's my guess. We get these things wrong all the time. Brandon Ayuk to Washington, probably a topic on tomorrow's show with this TikTok video that he's put out, this conversation he was having with Jaden Daniels. Him and Terry together, Jahan.
Be quite the combo. Quite the trio. Air Force Three.
Yeah. Yeah. Linnell's up next.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Justice isn't just a word, it's your right. We'll stand up for you when others can't. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
So real quickly about the last putt that Pavon, the Frenchman, putted, marked his ball, and then Bryson made the actual putt. And then we had to wait for Pavon to putt his. Apparently, it was a pretty similar line. So it would have been a major advantage for Bryson to have seen Pavon putt before him to clear the deck for him to win it and have the final putt of the tournament. And that's perhaps the reason that he marked and made Bryson putt first. But we have a bigger conversation here. Brandon Ayuk, the receiver for the 49ers, who does not have a contract extension, but potentially wants one. I mean, this is the big conversation about Ayuk being along with CeeDee Lamb among the group of receivers to get paid next. Ayuk, there's video of Ayuk and Jaden Daniels, his college quarterback at Arizona State, speaking via, I guess, just phone. And you're going to hear the conversation where Ayuk tells Jaden Daniels, they said they don't want me back, I swear.
They said they don't want me back. I swear.
So, Was that Jaden screaming, like, let's go get him?
That was Jaden screaming, my boy, on the other side of the FaceTime.
I mean, interesting. Ayuk saying they don't want him back. I can't imagine that the 49ers don't want Brandon Ayuk back.
Well, you know what's really interesting about this?
What?
Brandon Ayuk is the one who posted this video. This is on his personal TikTok account.
Oh, it's on his TikTok.
Yeah, so he posted this, which is either a leverage play or he really doesn't want to be there anymore.
Or, and maybe he'd like to come to Washington. What do they have to remember? Because they'd have to pay him, which, by the way, they have the cap space to do it, you're not talking about the same compensation level that it would be if he had years left on his deal, you know, and you didn't have to pay him. I don't know what it is. It's probably a future second. That's my guess. We get these things wrong all the time. Brandon Ayuk to Washington, probably a topic on tomorrow's show with this TikTok video that he's put out, this conversation he was having with Jaden Daniels. Him and Terry together, Jahan.
Be quite the combo. Quite the trio. Air Force 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Linnell's up next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.